We have Peter M. is back, and we'll continue his presentation, presenting 1 through 3 tonight. So I'll turn the meeting over to Peter.
Hi, everybody. I'm Peter. I'm a recovered alcoholic. Grateful to be alive and sober and at a sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous. And thank the group for allowing Chris and I to present again. We did this deal up in Vermont. We had some fun, and I love getting down here and sharing experience, strength, and hope on what this power, this book, and Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me and experienced the spiritual revolution. God separated me from alcohol June 23rd, 1988. I'm a recovered alcoholic. If I said anything less than that, I would be falsely humble. But a loving God separated me on the day of June 23rd, 1980. It was a violent and ugly separation. And I'm not talking about my marriage. I'm talking about alcohol. Is this on, Bill? And I tried quitting and stopping many times on my own power, and what would happen is I would stay away from the drink for a day or two, maybe a couple of minutes, and then my mind would convince me it's okay to pick up a drink again. Or I would spend 9 weeks in a treatment center and 2 days later get drunk again. Because on my own power, I have no choice and control. And the day of June 23rd, 1988, God interrupted my death and my drinking and separated me, and I've been separated since. And through that, I've been able to get to people who were armed with the facts, who had a solution, who knew my truth, who knew their truth, and were able to share with me, pass on a message. And I sought this, as I still do, with the desperation of a drowning man. And little by slowly, I start to experience waking up, experience the spiritual revolution, and being brought to a new place of consciousness. I don't use spiritual tools when I'm in a jam. The boss is on my back. Things aren't going well. What step do I look to? Who do I call? What book can I read? That'll give me a little relief, but not liberation. A new state of consciousness, experiencing the spiritual experience, it's now who we be. There's been a change, an internal revolution. A change within. It's a way of living. So I don't need to run to, well, what do I do now to get me out of this jackpot, to get them off my back, or do something so I can get a little bit of sleep tonight. We go through this work and we really become integrated with this power. It's completely different than relying on a couple of books or maybe a step or run to the 12 and 12 or read how it works or what I used to always get when I was first getting sober, read acceptance. You know, it was on me. I didn't know which way out, and they would say, read acceptance. And I would do that and get a little bit of relief. And where I've been brought to because of the work and following instructions is when we get revolutionized, we're in a different place altogether. And our reaction to external conditions is different. Because what's going to happen out there is going to happen. I have no power, choice, control over what other people do. Troubles are my own making, my book tells me. So things are going to happen, joys and challenges, joys and sorrows. But how I be and move through that is different than, here it comes again, what do I do? Who do I call? It's called inner peace. Rather than seeking happiness, because happiness depends on how my external world looks, and inner peace, whether things are going okay or not so okay, I'm okay moving through it. The work we do here is really spiritual life or spiritual death. And I needed to get that I wasn't doing this because it was fashionable, a lot of other people were doing it. For me, it came down to spiritual life and spiritual death out there, and 6 months in Alcoholics Anonymous, in here untreated. One of the questions we have to consider is, is my recovery based in abstinence or in spirit? If it's based in abstinence, then experiencing God is really not that important because you probably got power, choice, and control. because all I have to do is stay away from a drink, and regardless of what my life looks like, it's really okay, because you'll go to contemporary AA and be a big hit, because you can say, I didn't pick up a drink today, and I'm a winner. Right? But if my recovery's based in spirit, and this book is aimed at spirit, not the thinking mind, it's not self-help, it's not motivational, it'll motivate you, it'll scare the hell out of you sometimes too, but it's aimed at spirit, not the thinking mind. If my recovery is based in spirit, and I have no power, choice, or control because I'm a real alcoholic, what I need to do is experience the power of God. And from becoming a concept, and they talk about that, this concept, in the third step, this concept, this idea, from having an idea, talking about this idea, this concept of God, and passing through the archway free at last, is it still a concept if we're around here a little bit, or has it become an experience? There's a big difference. I can talk about God, but have I had an experience with God? I can talk about, well, you know, I'm an alcoholic. I would say that so many times in treatment. I'm an alcoholic. But did I get to that place of experiencing what it's truly like to be without power, choice, and control? So again, I probably said this last week, and I do it at a lot of workshops, is I would offer this to you, seek experience. Seek experience. Belief and faith will give me some relief. But seeking an experience and having an experience with this book, which will take me to God, of my understanding, having an experience with God, will bring me to a place of true liberation, freedom from bondage of self. There's a great word for it, and even that falls short. It's called bliss. I just got back from doing a workshop. And not just now, a few last week. I'm in Europe doing this workshop, and there's a few trailblazers there with this book, trying to pass this message on. They're watching a lot of their brothers and sisters in AA die, keep getting drunk. They got a hold of some tapes, got together, formed a little a cluster of enthusiasm, and they're trying to pass the message on, and are experiencing an incredible amount of resistance. People don't even want to talk about God, don't even mention God, and we don't need to do the steps. It's poor group therapy, column 2 meetings. But there's a handful of people who are trying to pass this on. And I applaud them for that. But here's what goes on, how we are so responsible for what we do. One gentleman says, we're trying to give hardline AA, like back in the States, real recovery. So I asked him to explain. He says, well, we tell our people 90 meetings in 90 days. That's contemporary stuff. That's not big book. But how many of our meetings are talking about that as if that is the solution rather than the steps in God? And it travels. It travels. So here's a group of people trying to pass a message on, taking it from what we got to offer currently, and that's 90 meetings in 90 days. That's hardline big book AA. And so I had to challenge that. And I experienced resistance from the big book people. How's that? I was asked to lead by a few Sunday morning guided meditation. And the question was brought to me, are you going to do the guided meditation this morning? And one gentleman in the front row went like this, no, no, no. All right? So, along with that, some of us here will go back to our home group or go back to our other meetings with a big book and in an experience looking to pass it on, and we will get resistance. And that will be called controversial in Alcoholics Anonymous. The reality is, it isn't. It isn't. And so I need to take that risk and just pass this message on. My home group is a Vision for You group. We meet in Union, New Jersey, Thursday nights at 7:30 to 8:45. And Chris was kind enough to come down and share our second group anniversary. And our group members couldn't believe we made 2 years. Because we were putting it together, we knew we were going to experience a ton of resistance, as we still do. My town hates our group. We get zero support from most people in that in AA and Union. Bless them. They found another way. But we didn't close up shop because we experienced some resistance. And we have about 20, maybe 30 people, sometimes more, passing a message on. And talking about what it is to be a real alcoholic and how to recover from alcoholism. Through the next few weeks, what may happen is sitting in the chair, you may experience resistance to the information being presented. It sounds different. I never did it before. And it'll manifest this way. I don't like the speaker. I don't like this workshop. It's too hot in here. I think I need to get more coffee. She looks really good. Let me go help her through her drama. Yeah. So what I ask you to do is just recognize that. Be aware of it. Watch it. Observe it. It's ego showing up. Ego doesn't want to die. And places like this, workshops like this, will kill ego. It will kill self. And what we need to do is experience the death of self before the physical death. And that's what this work will do. It'll remove. And ego doesn't want it. My illness doesn't want it. My mind will start chirping at me like, we need to go elsewhere. Recognize that. There's nothing wrong with it. There's nothing right about it. It just is. Accept what is. Be there present. Here goes my mind. I'm experiencing some resistance. The chair suddenly getting uncomfortable. Recognize that. Just be with it. Especially when belief systems get challenged. Well, I never did it that way. It's called contempt prior to investigation. Before you let your mind offer an opinion without experience, be and listen. Just be with the workshop. How many people have ever never gone to any kind of big book workshop? Good deal, welcome. Everyone else is a big book lawyer, I guess, right? Okay. How many people have gone to the 12 steps, believe they've gone to the 12 steps and have experienced the spiritual awakening as a result of these steps? Okay. And all those guys and women who raise their hands who believe they've had a spiritual awakening as a result of the steps, you don't have to raise your hand, but my question is, how many of you guys have completed your amends that you're consciously aware of? Mm-hmm. Good deal. Because what we can get into is, well, I've gone through the 12 steps, but I have, you know, a truckload of amends that I'm aware of that I can make and I haven't made. But my deluded mind will tell me, you've gone through the steps and you're okay. And I'll get to those amends when I get to those amends. And what I've just shifted into is a prey to comfortability and getting stuck on the second half of the first step. My life was unmanageable. It's pretty manageable now. The external world looks pretty good. I feel good. And so the amends I'm supposed to be making, I can do tomorrow. And suddenly I have become the power. And I keep me sober because I'm calling the shots. And how many times am I going to my sponsor and being truthful and not dishonest? When I start to do things like that, I've shifted in becoming the power and I'm responsible for my recovery. Any kind of power I think I have over the next drink is really how much I'm going to seek this power of God. For me, going from pages 23 to 43, and I got to see my thinking mind in action, realize how in a corner I was with no way out, it moved me to seeking this power. And so what I hope to talk about as we move through this work is not only going through steps 1, 2, and 3 and the rest of the work, maybe for the first time, but those of us who've been around here a while, how do we get the book to meet us where we are? Been sober a few years, gone through the work a few times. How do I go through the work again? How do I get this book to meet me where I currently am? What's my current unmanageability look like? The first thing my mind's going to say, you have none. Everything's great. And what I do when people come to me like that, like has been passed on to me, is I move right to page 52 with the bedevilments. It's current unmanageability. It's unmanageability back then when we first got in here. Having trouble with person relationships, can't control my emotional nature, prey to misery and depression, full of fear, couldn't make a living, can't be of real help to other people, feeling of uselessness. Am I experiencing any of that? In fact, am I kind of living in that place? And I'm trying to move me past each bedevilment on my own power, trying to get past each bedevilment. Bedevilment, I didn't go to school, so I had to look up what that word meant. And I went to the University of 86th Street in Bensonhurst, Brooklyn. Bedevilment is something that torments or harasses and frustrates us. The bedevilment's on page 52. It's unmanageability. Do I think I can get me past each one on my own power if I'm living there? Or have I tried and have bottomed out, and now I need to seek the power of God, which is the only power that's going to get me past those bedevilments? So when people come to me, one of the first things I go to is page 52 and look at current unmanageability. And then we'll visit doctor's opinion, Bill's story, and some of the considerations in chapter 2, agnostics, as to what that looks like. With the contempt pride investigation, with some of the resistance we may experience, lay aside prejudice, lay it aside, and be aware of it. Okay, it's really important that we do that. It kind of goes like this: what I don't know, I fear, and what I fear, I dislike. So shut it down. Don't like the message, shoot down the messenger. I've done it. Right? I've also attended How the Mind Works, and we'll get into this, the steps 1, 2, and 3. How the mind works is I'm hearing some new information. I start to experience uncomfortability. I start to experience resistance, and I'm right away thinking, well, I don't like this speaker. He or she has no idea what they're talking about. They've done it different. And then that very same speaker goes, I want to thank Pete for all the help he's given me. He's been a great guy. And suddenly I love the workshop and I love the speaker. Because the ego got stroked. Right? Thinking mind. Great thing to lose. It'll pretty up a junkyard. It'll take us back to that which is killing us over and over and over again. Wants me dead, settle for me drunk. And we'll know the cracks in the armor. Our book tells us that knowledge alone will not work, right? Without an experience. And we can acquire a whole lot of knowledge in here. As we go through this book, we're going to acquire knowledge. But that very same knowledge is a thing that'll turn against me and justify a spree. I know what I'm doing. I have lots of knowledge. I've been around a while. And a thinking mind will justify a spree, will justify a drunk, will justify a lot of inappropriate behavior for those of us who claim to be on this path. And then I moved into speaking from experience to now speaking from a place of intellect, which is another thing we can worship right away, intellect, the thinking mind, the methodology. We get real familiar with the book. We can quote, give little sound bites, go to page, you know, right? And I fall in love with me rather than the power. And what we're looking to do is not go through this work so I can keep me sober, but go through this work to have an experience with God, this power that's keeping us sober all along. And we need to get that and wake up to that and then continue to grow in understanding and effectiveness. If we go over to the title page, and I'm just going to pull a couple of things out of here. We're going to be coming from a place of experience here. On the title page in the third edition, it's one of the first promises in our book, and it kind of will give us some understanding of why we can say we're recovered if we've experienced it. We don't have to cop to I'm recovering. It says the story of how many thousands of men and women have recovered from alcoholism. It's right on our title page. It's the first promise in the book. And how do I get to a place called recovered? If you have a third edition and you have the little blue covers on a third edition, on the little fly page, it says, but the basic text, pages 1 to 164, have remained unchanged. This is the AA message. And I take that first portion of the book with the sponsor, and I will get to a place called recovered. Placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected, I've not tried to will myself into it. I've not tried to do that. It's done for us. And then we can go where we couldn't go before. We can be when around liquor being served. We can go to parties. We can do a lot of things, and I don't have to worry about issues and triggers and all of that, because God is doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. Step one says we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. The thing I had to get with step one, I conceded to my innermost self I was an alcoholic when I was out there. I knew what I was. It was made abundantly clear to me. But coming in here, I got a little bit deeper understanding of why I'm different from those moderate and hard drinkers, why I'm the person on page 21, the real alcoholic. I lack power, I lack choice, and I lack control. And those words are interchangeable. Lack of power, choice, and control. Not only after I pick up a drink. My mind takes me back to a drink. I pick up a drink, and the phenomenon of craving kicks in. The craving's intensified, not satisfied. When I drink, I'm a real alcoholic, and I don't know when it's going to stop. That's once I pick up a drink. The unmanageability of my life, well, sure, you know, a blind man can see the unmanageability. A lot of things are not being taken care of, and our lifestyle gets reduced to some of the places, the sordid spots that some of us visit and some of the things we do. But there's another component to the unmanageability, and it kicks over to the first half of the first step, about lack of power, choice, or control before I pick up a drink. This took me a long time to get. I would go into treatment and be separated for a while, come out and get drunk again. My body wasn't craving alcohol. I was separated for quite a while. What happened? How come some of us are separated? Maybe we make 3-4 months sobriety, and suddenly my mind says we can go back to drink again. It convinces me to go back to that which is killing me. And that is the unmanageability for me in the first half of the first step, that I have no input into the decision that's being made for me by something called alcoholism coming from a thinking mind. I have no power, choice, or control to stop the starting or stop the drunk when I think it should be stopped. So the lack of power, choice, and control in step one before I pick up a drink is in the mind. And once I pick up a drink, it becomes in the body, because now I got booze going in and my body's craving more alcohol. And when I heard this information, I understood truly why I suffer the way I do at the hands of alcohol, but I also felt incredibly screwed. If we go over to chapter 2 for a moment. It says on page 18, how do I get this book to meet me where I am? It says, an illness of this sort, and we have come to believe it an illness, involves those about us in a way no other human sickness can. If a person has cancer, all is sorry for him, no one is angry or hurt. But not so with the alcoholic illness, for with it there goes annihilation of all things worthwhile in life. It engulfs all whose lives touch the sufferers. And now we need to pay attention to this. It brings misunderstanding, fierce resentment, financial insecurity, disgusted friends and employers. Warped lives of blameless children, sad wives and parents, anyone can increase the list. And well, that was pretty obvious for me on my way in here in 1988. But the question we have to consider is, being separated from alcohol in here a while, does my life resemble anything that I just read? Does it look like that? Am I bringing that type of stuff, unmanageability, to other people based on my behavior? Because it's a really good red flag to maybe I need to revisit the work, because I'm running around Alcoholics Anonymous untreated. It'll parallel, loosely, but parallel, page 52. I get into Alcoholics Anonymous and things start to, the wrinkles get out of my belly and I start going through the work and I'm starting to feel really good about a lot of things. I'm starting to feel better about me. And it was real easy what I did, like after I got done with my fifth step, to rest on my laurels because I became a prey to comfortability and I got stuck on the second half of the first step. Life was certainly unmanageable. It became a lot more manageable. So I don't need to really go to any lengths. And then I bottom out again. And do some more inventory and revisit the work again. My ego, my thinking mind, will not tell me that suddenly is coming. The drink is coming. It will not tell me you're really not paying attention to spiritual growth here. You really should be working with more people. It's not going to tell me. It's not going to announce its arrival. It's going to endorse any kind of behavior that's going to take me away from this power. And that's why a book gives us some warnings along this way. So I moved into a place of no power, choice, or control. When I go through the first 43 pages of this book, and I'm not sure what I am, am I alcoholic, am I not alcoholic, am I addict and alcoholic, what is my truth? I need to build this, have this journey built on truth. I can't build it on a line. I need to find out what my truth is. And going through the first 43 pages may reveal to me what my truth is if I'm not sure. And if I am sure, it'll convince me even further. And so I go through doctor's opinion. One, a great assignment we can do is take statements and turn them into questions. Do I experience or have I experienced an allergic reaction to alcohol, an abnormal reaction to alcohol? Do I experience the mental obsession to alcohol? And my mind is always thinking about alcohol. When I'm drinking, I'm worried about the next one. When I'm not drinking, I'm thinking about drinking. It's paramount. Every time I pick up a drink, do I experience the allergy? Or do I pick up a drink and have power to stop it? A book separates us over and over and over again. They call us alcoholics of our type in this class. What about the real alcoholic, chronic alcoholics? A great assignment for Bill's story is we go through Bill's story in the first 9 pages of Bill's story. In fact, go over to page 9, please. And it says about a third of the way down, it says the very thing in Oasis, drinkers are like that. What I was instructed to do is draw a line across the page, and that's the split in Bill's story. The first half is his story, lack of power, choice, and control. And I go through those first 9 pages, and I underline where I drank like Bill, how I thought like Bill, I feel like Bill. To identify with Bill Wilson, even though he was some, well, stockbroker. And at the time when I went to this work for the first time, I was a longshoreman. Well, what do I have in common with Bill? We're both alcoholic. And I go through the second half of Bill's story, and I look at where I'm experiencing any sort of resistance when he's talking about God, or Ebby's talking to him about God. Am I experiencing some kind of, like, tightness in here? Uh-oh, they're going to talk about God now. Don't judge it if you do. Well, this is not good. I'm experiencing some resistance because Bill and Ebby are talking about God here. Bill turns in all things to the Father of Light. I don't know if I can do that. Don't judge that. Just see it for what it is. Because it's great information now that we can get past. It makes us aware of some current agnosticism. When we go through this work, don't judge any of it. Whatever the behavior looks like, whatever was going on, just observe it. I think last time I was here, I worked with a few words, watch, aware, observe, and turn in. Turn into God in order to go out. So step one will paint us into a corner where we're really feeling like we're in serious trouble, as we ought to. Contemporary A will tell us, step one tells us we can't drink. And the reality is step one tells us, no, I'm going to drink. Pete Marinelli, you are drinking. Not that you can't drink, you're drinking. That's your truth, and you can't stop it when you want to. Even the most powerful desire to stop drinking is of absolutely no avail. That's my big book that tells me that, and my experience proved it to me. Fra the emotional peel, seldom suffices. Step one tells me, Peter Marinelli, you are drinking, and you can't stop it, even though you may want to. regardless of what's going on around you and what's going on within you, you ain't stopping until it's done. And that'll bring me to incomprehensible demoralization, and my solution to that is another drink. This is killing me, but I'll take more to work on what's killing me, which is this. It's delusional. If it had to do with any other area of our life, we may or probably will be able to be sane and rational. But when it comes to alcohol, we're strangely insane. A civilian would look at some of my behavior and say, a lunacy commission ought to be appointed for you. I don't get it. 5 treatment centers. You were 9 weeks in treatment. You're loaded. What does it take? You swore on everything holy on your way in. You're loaded again. That's lack of power and choice and control. That's unmanageability. That's I'm screwed. Where's the solution? Step one tells me I'm drinking. Lack of power is my dilemma. With power, no dilemma. Yet in contemporary AA, they say it's a we program. It's a we program. What happened to it's a spiritual program? A we program, my book says, no human power can relieve me of alcoholism. We is a human power. I may get a little relief around we, but the power's got to come from something greater than me. Eventually, call God. So we went from a spiritual program to middle-of-the-road AA, contemporary AA. It's a we program. We meet. We get together. We lean on each other. We support. We teach. It's a spiritual program. And all the work we do here, our point is to experience God. So I go through step one and realize what kind of serious trouble I'm in, that I'm going to drink. I identify with Bill Wilson. I identify with Dr. Silkworth says in Doctor's Opinion. And I have no clue how I'm ever going to get to a place called recovered and experience the 10-step promises. Sometimes newcomers will say, when is it going to get off of me? It's on me. I can't get away from it. I'll show them the 10-step promises. I'll even show them the 9-step promises. And let them know there's a condition on all of that, that we must do some work. And we need to turn to the power. I pray for willingness, 18 years now, to continue doing this each morning. Thank you, Father, for the willingness to do this. Because based on me, I have no clue if I'll show up to the plate and continue doing this. I've been given great power in here, but I've learned I'm not the power. So we get to step two, and it better be a solution that's going to relieve me of alcoholism. And step two is the solution. I just want to challenge a couple of things here. In more about alcoholism, there's a couple of things. Start with page 24, if we can go to page 24. And there's a solution, I'm sorry. A real alcoholic, no power, choice, and control. A real alcoholic, step one tells us we're drinking, that I have a mind that's going to take me back to that which is killing me. I come into Alcoholics Anonymous with a sick mind. The solution is not in the mind, it's in the spirit. Yet we'll hear, think the drink through. Play the tape to the end. Remember what it was like. Remember where you come from. And I'm telling someone with a sick mind to overcome a sick mind. I'm telling someone who is suffering from untreated alcoholism to make a sane, rational decision. If he or she could have done that, they would have put the plug in a jug and gone home and had a nice life. But they show up to us and we give them play the tape through, think the drink through. And here's what page 24 says about that. At a certain point in the drinking of every alcoholic, he or she passes into the state where the most powerful desire to stop drinking is of absolutely no avail. This tragic situation has already arrived in practically every case long before it is suspected. The fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. Our so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink. The almost certain consequences that follow taking even a glass of beer do not crowd into my mind to deter me. If these thoughts occur, they are hazy and readily supplanted with the old threadbare idea that this time I'm going to handle myself like those other people. That's what my mind is going to do for me when it's untreated. Yet we'll tell a newcomer, think it through. And we shortchange a new alcoholic. We shortchange what God to do for us. And we go from having a solution in a book to offering no solution. In More About Alcoholism, they talk about a guy named Fred. And in Alcoholics Anonymous, in some of our contemporary AA meetings, you'll hear HALT. Hungry, angry, lonely, tired. Look out for HALT. Look out for HALT. Like you're walking down a block. Don't run into HALT. Right? Look out. Oh, no. Oh, I'm hungry. Oh, no. I'm lonely. The trigger is I'm going to drink. I got to watch for hungry, angry, lonely, tired. What happened to God? Fred wasn't hungry. Fred wasn't angry. Fred wasn't lonely, nor was he tired. It was at the end of a perfect day, not a cloud on the horizon. He had a great business day. He was feeling great about things. And Fred got drunk because Fred experienced something called a strange mental blank spot, more unmanageability, more lack of power, choice, and control. He didn't say, tonight I'm going to go out and get drunk. Suddenly the thought crosses his mind, he gets drunk. Struck drunk is how I've heard it referred to. I've had it many times. You're in the middle of a spree going, how did this happen? What am I doing here? I thought I wasn't going to do this anymore. Well, I'm fired up, so might as well finish it. Emerging remorse with a firm resolution. I'm never going to do this again. And that gets so bad when we're out of it, I need to seek comfort somewhere. I'm back on another drunk or on some other sort of spree, which takes me back to the drunk anyway. Fred wasn't hungry, angry, lonely, tired, and Fred got drunk. So I don't tell newcomers, look out for HALT. I say experience God. Me looking out for triggers and issues or HALT is self-reliance, thinking I'm going to keep me sober if I look out for these things. We get to step two, the solution to this whole deal. Came to believe that a power greater than me is going to restore me to sanity, wholeness of mind. God could and would if he was sought. God can, has, if I continue to seek him. Could and would, can and has, after the experience. Step two is the solution. That I will get to a place, I will be brought to a place of wholeness of mind, sanity, where my thinking mind is no longer telling me to pick up a drink because I'm living in truth. I'm living in an experience with God. At the beginning, a power greater than myself could be a group of drunks for good orderly direction. It'll work for a short time. But after a while, I'm going to realize that it is a human power. And what happens if the group closes down? What happens if I come to a meeting? I need this meeting. My meetings keep me sober. We hear that. The meetings keep me sober. What if there's a lock on a door? Then what? I call my sponsor every day. I'm working a great program. That keeps me sober. What if the sponsor goes home to God? What if the sponsor gets drunk? At the very beginning, I found safety in the fellowship. I found power in the unity, in all the numbers. And I was given a little bit of grace. And that wasn't working anymore. And I was moved to go through this work. We get to chapter two, agnostics, and there's some neat things in chapter two, agnostics. For me, one of the most powerful chapters in this book. And we're introduced into step two. It tells me on the bottom of page 44, if a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life was sufficient to overcome alcoholism, many of us would have recovered long ago. But we found that such codes and philosophies did not save us, no matter how much we tried. Save us is the key word here. We may get some relief from it. Codes, different philosophy for life, reading self-help books, attending seminars, listening to motivational speakers, things like that. They may work for a short time, but they won't bring me to a place called recovered. I have a lot of friends when I was back in Brooklyn who would run from retreat to retreat to retreat to retreat, like retreat junkies. When's the next retreat? And I'm not saying they're good or bad, but they were relying on that to have some sort of experience. And they would come back from these retreats fired up. What a retreat. We meditated. We did a fifth step. It was tremendous. You have to come. And about 2 weeks later, they bottomed out again. They were all over page 52. When's the next retreat? So we do that along with, not instead of. That's why our book says, did not save us. We may get some relief, but never free until we experience God. On page 45, it says, lack of power, that was my dilemma. I had to find a power by which I could live, and it had to be a power greater than myself. It says, where and how to find this power. Chapter 2, Agnostics, is going to show me how to find this power, where to find this power, and even why I ought to find this power. Lack of power is my dilemma. For me, maybe one of the most powerful statements in the book. Lack of power, and I need to get power now. Now. I sat with my sponsor and a handful of guys in Staten Island, and there was a gentleman just coming back from another drunk. And if he got arrested and went back to prison, he was never going to get out again. And he was in that place of obsession. And we sat, and in a very short time, my sponsor watched him through the first three proposals, and maybe 10 of us held hands and did a third step prayer together. And he launched onto a course of vigorous action, 4 through 9. He started writing down names. And he came up with 7 names for his resentment list. And I sat back and says, no good. This is not going to fly. My sponsor is going to, tell me he needs to do more work. And my sponsor said, good enough, let's go. We'll start with 7. You need to get power. Let's do that. And he worked with that guy on 7 names. Lack of power is our dilemma. So step 2 says, came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. That this power is going to take me to a place of wholeness of mind. It's an arrival point. It's done for me. And that is delivered to me by the time I get to step 10. Because step 10 tells me, by this time, sanity will have returned. It's delivered. They offer it and then deliver it, because we're talking about God. So much for middle of the road AA contemporary A, who tells us the meetings keep us sober and meeting makers make it. I was a meeting maker and got drunk. But God could and would if he was sought. You with me? I was doing a meeting one time, and this woman was sharing. I was doing a 6th and 7th step, and she says, well, it's easy for you to talk about God. You're sober this long. You know the book. I can't find God. And I shared with her, well, God's not lost, and the great reality is deep down within. And I says, all we need to do is suit up and show up to this book, that this book will enable us to find the power greater than ourselves. This book. We follow the instructions in this book, and it will take us to that place. So step 2 is the solution. And what I do in step 3 is make a decision to get to that solution, and I take action in 4 through 9. And in 4 through 9, I will experience the spiritual revolution, because by the time I hit 10, it tells me I've entered the world of the spirit. I've had an experience. I've been made new, reborn. On page 47, in our book, in chapter 2, Agnostics, it keeps asking us to lay aside prejudice, old ideas, preconceived ideas, judgments, contempt. Lay it aside, lay it aside. It tells me in this chapter that I didn't need to have someone else's conception of God. It tells us, great words, that our own conception of God, no matter how inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach. It tells me that in chapter 2, Agnostics. My own conception of God, no matter how inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach. Am I willing, yes or no? A spiritual experience begins with a mustard seed of willingness, and circumstances make us willing, step 1. It tells me on page 42, it asks me, we need to ask ourselves but one short question. Do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself? Then it promises me, as soon as I can say that I do believe, or am I even willing to believe, they emphatically assure me that I'm on my way. It says it has been repeatedly proven among us that upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built. Am I willing, yes or no? Circumstances in step 1 make me willing. I sat with a gentleman a while ago in Brooklyn. I always share this story. Pretty rough character. Did some ugly things while he was out there. And we got to step two. And I'm talking to him about experiencing God and going through this book with him. And he really didn't think he had a chance to recover because of some of the things he did. And he came in with a belief system that God is punishing. And based on his track record, he has no chance with a power called God. And then I read him something out of this chapter where it says, God doesn't make too hard terms to those who earnestly seek. It is open to all. Inclusive, not exclusive. And I start to read some more of this chapter to him, and this big strappy guy began to weep in front of me. And for the first time in his life, he felt like he had a chance to recover because it melted all his old ideas about what God was like. And he was willing. And we began going through this. I would bristle with antagonism when people would talk to me about God when I was drinking. Early on in AA, I would hear people talk about God. I would sit back and say, yeah, well, it's easy for you. I would hear someone who was convinced, they're sure they were sitting in the chair, they were sitting, that God was working in their life. And I would say, how do you get there? How do you get to that place? Because I'm nowhere near there. And then I sat with the sponsor and he says, are you willing to grow along spiritual lines? Are you willing to seek this power? Yes or no? And that's all I needed was a spirit of willingness. Group of drunks, good old direction, God. Do the work and I get to a place of experience in my own personal God. But I'll just share this real quick. What I got into was having an experience with God and then little by slowly starting to rely on my intellect about what God is and is not. And I didn't realize that I can be the most well-read person. And yet, what I know maybe goes to the end of the room only. It amounts to a grain of sand on a beach, right? When we're talking about God, and my intellect started to say, well, this is God and this isn't. And little by slowly, I conceptualized this power of God. And what I did was I put him in a box. Rather than the power just is, all love and no opposite. All love, no opposite. Just is. But I was thinking, this is God, that isn't God. God does this, he doesn't do that. And years later, I got into, well, God, where's my reward? Because I'm working with others. Which meant when I wasn't, I was going to be punished. So we can get into conceptualizing his power rather than just being with it and experiencing it. We'll go over to how it works. And there's some things I just want to take a look at. Step three says, made a decision to turn our will and life over to the care of God as we understood him at that moment. And how do you work step three? By doing 4 through 9. Not hanging around in step three. But making decision to turn my will and life over to care of God. One of the questions you have to consider, am I willing to live on terms other than my own in step three? Am I willing to go to any lengths to recover, even though I don't know what any lengths is going to look like? Because if I'm attached to the outcome of what that's going to look like, all I'm going to do is acquire a whole lot of knowledge and reinvent myself. And then I become dangerous. Trust me, if I knew what any lengths looked like before they showed up, I don't know if I would agree to it, right? But any length shows up, am I willing to grow or not? Go back to step one, circumstances make me willing. Very often when I take people to the work and they're struggling, I can't get through step four. I'm having a problem turning it over in three. I'm having problem with amends in nine. When they have all the mechanics down, what it really comes down to is a reservation about step one. Bring it back to step one, not the step before, but step one. That's the problem. On page 60, it tells me about the ABCs. Am I convinced that I'm an alcoholic and cannot manage my own life? Step one. Am I convinced that probably no human power could relieve me of my alcoholism? Step two. Do I get that God could and would if he was sought and nothing less than that? Also step two. Not Joe, the spiritual guy at the AA meeting. Not the Wednesday night, you know, ABC meeting. You know, not the retreat. Not the self-help book. But God could and would if he was sought. Do I get that? There's a decision in step three and also a requirement. And one of the requirements is, am I convinced that my life on self-will can hardly be a success? My first step abundantly proved that to me. Am I convinced that my life on self-will can hardly be a success? Many times we hear a lot of arguments and discussions on how to turn it over. This is how you turn it over. This is how I turn it over. And it goes on and on and on, right? Or they'll just simply tell a newcomer, turn it over, and they're looking to turn tables over like I was, with no instructions on how to do that, right? But our book, right on page 60, says, just what do we mean by that, and what do we do? And it's going to go on to tell me, how do we turn our will and life over to care of God? And it points to inventory in 4, discussion with someone else in 5, defects looking at that in 6 and 7, and going out and making amends, and then we hit the world of the Spirit as we clean up the wreckage of our past. And suddenly we've been set free. Page 62. It says, selfishness and self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us seemingly without provocation, but we invariably find that at some time in the past we made decisions based on me, which later placed me in a position to be hurt. We come into Alcoholics Anonymous consumed. I come in here consumed with me. It's all about me. I know what you're thinking. And you're thinking about me, and it's unkind. Right? My sponsor gives a great analogy. He's going to a meeting, he says, oh no, I got to go to this meeting. What if they don't like me? Oh no, when I get there, what if they do like me? What if they're going to ask me to share? Oh no, they're not going to ask me to share. Oh no, it's all about me, right? And that's what they're talking about here. Watch what the shift that we experience on page 63, right across the page. It says in the middle of the first paragraph, more and more we became interested in seeing what we can contribute to life. And right before that, it says we became less and less interested in ourselves. We're consumed with us on page 62. We move over a page and it's less and less about me and more about how I can help others contribute to life. The third step, really, is on the bottom of page 62. And it goes something like this. It starts off with, this is the how and why of it. First of all, I had to quit playing God. Am I willing to quit playing God? And when I do step 4, I will see how I've been playing God in every area of my life. It said it didn't work. Next, we decide that hereafter in this drama of life, God was going to be my director. He's the principal. We are his agents. He's the father. We're the children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of our new and triumphant arc to which we passed to freedom. When I took this position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. I worked with page 62 and 63 for, I don't know, maybe 6 months, and I would say it and go into meditation with it. Tremendous experience I had with that. That really is my third step. And my third step prayer is just an affirmation of it. And I'll just, I got to shut down here, but the third step, we want this book, we want to have an experience with this book. We want to personalize this book. And so what I was told to do with the third step prayer was write it out word for word. And then underneath that, write out my interpretation of that prayer word for word. What is that book saying in my language? What does relieve me of the bondage of self me? What does that look like to me? And I wrote it out word for word and I said it. And when I did the third step prayer, it now little by slowly moved into my prayer. It had some depth and weight. It wasn't some words on a page. And I went from, language of knowledge to language now of experience. And that's how we have the revolution. The book becomes our book. It's talking to me in our language. And then I sat down the first time, the second time, and each other time going through this work and do the third step prayer with the sponsor. And then he never told me, okay, let's hang out a while because you did the third step. Because the fourth step may get you drunk, right? As soon as we completed the third step, we moved into inventory, step four. It's 9 o'clock and I need to shut down, so thank you for listening.
Jameson, I'm a recovered alcoholic. PD kept saying step two is the solution. Why do we have another 11 steps?
Say it again. Step two is the solution.
So why do we have another 11 steps? Isn't it just information about the solution?
Step two, for me, points to the solution. That once I experience the power of God, I'll be brought to a place of sanity, wholeness of mind. I make a decision. I haven't had that experience yet. I make a decision in three to get there, and as I move through the work, I'll experience the power of God, because step 10 tells me sanity will have returned. That's what I'm shooting for.
Do I hand it off?
Thanks for sharing, Peter. I have a question. You just mentioned your third step prayer. You translated it into your own language. Do you still use that translation? And if you do, what is it basically?
No, I use the prayer in the book. Okay. But each time I go through the work, I'll interpret it to see where I'm at and in my language again. Because sometimes we'll experience changes. We look at the third step prayer a little different this time, but when I go through the work, I'll write out my interpretation of the prayer, where I currently am with that. What does that look like right now? But I will always go back to what the book says.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks.
You're welcome. It's really, by the way, the intent to which we show up to that prayer, the intent, pure or not. If I lived on an island all alone and I want to turn my will of life over to care of God and never saw a third step prayer, do the words... Don't they just express a spirit of willingness? Are the words that important sometimes? God, I turn my life to you without doing a third step prayer, and my intent is pure. That's incredibly powerful. So.
Thanks. Kathleen, alcoholic. How do you specifically kill your ego? Like, what specific steps can you take? Because my ego is very insidious. It's like my disease. It's very cunning and baffling. And sometimes when I think that I'm being self-preserving or self-caring, it's really my ego coming out. And is there any way, do you kill your ego? Or is there a way to align it with God's will where, God can kind of channel itself through your ego or something like that? Or is it just just an evil, evil entity in you?
Don't talk about my in-laws. Ego, easing God out. It's real possible that your ego will be here until you go home to God. Going through the work, we get rid of self. Going through the work will kill manifestations of self. It'll silence the ego. We align our will with the will of God. It becomes a shift. So what I get to do many times is watch the thinking mind where the ego lives, become that much more aware of it. Once I start to do that, it loses steam immediately. When I start to resist what is, ego kicks in and tries to run the show again. It'll be better if it was this way, it should be that way. Let's figure something out. Self-reliance, ego starts to breathe. Will ego die completely? I don't know if self will ever die completely. But each time I revisit the work, it dies a little bit more. So to answer your question in a nutshell, it's about going through this work and experiencing the death of self. What can happen to us is we look at what we think it ought to look like and how much work may be involved, and what gets in the way, I think I shared this last week, is the way. Rather than just suiting up and showing up and going from point A to point B and from point B to point C, and little by slowly God will do for you what you can't do for yourself. Is God not more powerful than ego? He better be. So it's really awareness has a lot to do with the experience. I get awareness. I get to observe. I get to watch. Here it goes. Watch it. Once I step away from that, after turning in, suddenly it loses power. If I don't do that, it'll convince me of a lot of things that are not true. It'll convince me to do what it needs for me to do. Make sense? Okay.
Thank
you. Hi, I'm Tom. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Tom.
You mentioned something about when a sponsee or a newcomer is like, you know, when it's on them, when, you know, halt is on them or whatever, when they're just freaking out, maybe really want to drink, and you know, people, contemporary AA or whatever, would say, you know, think the drink through or play the tape to the end, and, you know, I understand that that's not a solution. But what would you tell them, like, in the moment to get... for help in the moment, you know, because I've worked with sponsees who are really willing and pretty much do everything I tell them. And in the beginning, you know, they still get attacked, you know, they still get attacked while writing a fourth step or, you know, while praying all the time, you know. Just wondering, what can you say to them?
Okay. I will tell you from experience what I've done because it's happened to me. After talking to them for a few minutes, because when someone's like that, they tend to just keep going. And so I'll allow them that. And I get down to where they are because I know what that's like. I'll get to where they are. And once they get to a place of pause, once they pause, I will pray with them. Let's stop the train with the power of God. I will pray with them, whether they're willing or not. I will pray with them and for them. Ask them if they're working with anyone. I'll give them some considerations, and hopefully at that point they'll be willing to do something to get past that, like the steps. But at that moment, the only place to turn, the solution is God. And I will pray for them or with them. Most often, that'll slow the runaway trade down. It's God. Okay, bring him back. Well, thank you, everyone, for dealing with the heat and for the great questions and making this a pretty fun time. Thank you.